You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's Durafighter Interior Paint is a paint and primer in one with a tough, lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's Durafighter Paint and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Thanks for joining me for another Blunt Business here on CannabisRadio.com. Thank you all for joining us and finding the program as you always do, whether it be through CannabisRadio.com, the CannabisRadio.com app, where you can find it in your local app store, and of course through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, YouTube Music, all major podcast platforms you can find. Joining me on the program very shortly is the founder and CEO of the Cannabis Business Advisors, or CB Advisors, Sarah Gullickson. We're bringing her on back. There's a lot to go and cover when it comes to various legalization issues in the Southeast, and also the rollout of legalized cannabis in Minnesota. We'll talk about all about that in a moment. But first, Blunt Business is powered by the Buzz CRM. So you're looking for a sales team. This is another way to go and look at this. The Buzz CRM is, again, not just software as a service, but you're talking about when you want to work on lead generation, you want to work on having the team to go ahead and make the phone calls, text, email, callbacks, all of it. This can be done for you. Marketing automation, workflows, intuitive. It's a great service. Low barrier to entry. The Buzz CRM is your one place for all this, with over 500 different modules available for you. And you can also easily integrate whatever you're working on into the platform. Get rid of all these clogged up logins, the bloated amount of logins and passwords you need, and other programs that are probably being redundant that you don't even need. So you go ahead and take it and put it into one platform and make it work for you. TheBuzzCRM.com. I did it with no script. Look at that. TheBuzzCRM.com. Go ahead and find out more today. And with that said, let me go ahead and introduce once again a recognized leader in the cannabis space. She's been named in 2024 Benzinga's Cannabis Advisor of the Year, and she entered the industry over a decade ago, seizing the opportunity and building her success through determination. Her company, CB Advisors, is known for a strategic approach for cannabis licensing, honed through experience navigating numerous state program rollouts and adapting to evolving market needs. Once again, I want to welcome back Sarah Gullickson back to Blunt Business. Thanks for being on.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Really glad to have you back. We've had so much to cover since roughly 13 months ago. And last time we had you on, you were talking about the issues when it comes to Minnesota's cannabis rollout and where things were going to go with that. A lot has happened. Hell, the governor actually ran for vice president in the time we were away. So we'll get back to that. But we'll talk about that after the first break. But there's some things being brought up that your team's been looking at and focusing on right now. So on one of my last programs, I talked to a couple of attorneys about the issues going on in Georgia. And this is a longer story when it comes to the Southeast in general. Georgia recently made a sudden move to ban THC-infused drinks and restrict Delta 8 and Delta 9 in other products. So there was a shift that's being perceived right now in the Southeast United States' stance on hemp-derived cannabinoids and its potential impact on the market. But in the meantime, on your LinkedIn page, CB Advisors talked about the fact about the recent bills in Texas and North Carolina presented to legalize cannabis. We'll talk about those individually in a moment. But do you see anything about any concern or possible deterrence here because of the fact that we're seeing the issues of hemp-derived cannabinoids being taken out, but then cannabis still being legalized and being pushed and put forward in bills.
Absolutely. You know, I think it's a difficult conversation because I think that there's a place for all of these things. What I think we're majorly lacking is the regulation of it, right? And so if there's not this $1 trillion fund that can go out and actually understand what restaurants, grocery stores, convenience stores are actually selling to ensure that it's safe and tested, it can't function, right? And so I think that I'm not so much of a capitalist where I'm like, this shouldn't have its place in the market. But what we've seen is it's running rogue. And so how do we understand what's being sold, where it's being sold, how it's being tested, and actually understand that we're putting a good product on the market versus not? And then when this is happening and it's like illegal fashion, it's crushing the actual cannabis facilities and licensees that have spent so much money on testing and growing product that doesn't have, you know, pesticides and making sure that we're putting a precise product on the market. So, you know, I don't know that I have this completely solved because actually it all boils down to capital, right? Mm-hmm. So what capital are we allocating towards policing the actual industry in a way that the actual cannabis dispensary license shops are being policed, right? Yeah. And then when you go into a market that's unlimited, like in New York, you can't police all of them. And so that's why we're seeing this huge uproar of gray market. Last week, it was interesting. We're helping a group in New York that was actually an Arizona group. And, you know, they're having a hard time getting customers in the door because the bodega next door and the convenience stores around them mm-hmm. are all selling product that we don't even know what this product is. So for me, I don't know what the right answer is. I actually think that it is a good move to ban some of it in the sense that, you know, you write a rule on banning it or a law on banning it, excuse me. And so that we can wrap our head around it and roll it out in the right fashion. Should there be a place for hemp-derived drinks and THC-derived drinks, which are obviously blurring the lines of being the same thing? Yes, absolutely. And I think there's space for both markets. It's just these states don't have a budget to enforce, and that's what they're lacking.
It still comes down to we do not have any set framework or rules of engagement. None of these states are able to go and give that. And also, there are universal standards, and I've talked about this over and over, like a broken record. We have standards that can be put in place right now today if right. the state governments, if the federal government wanted to go ahead and put into place. So, we've talked about this before. So if you want to go ahead and make good manufacturing practices for cannabis, that is already set for other industries. It can apply the same way here when it comes to the hemp industry and the hemp-derived cannabinoids. The hemp bill never put the framework in, but you could always go to the Cosmetics Act of 1930 to go and put that into place. And there's other things that can be put in for other industries that can be put into the same standard. But now, we've talked about the fact that that should be a self-imposed by industries themselves, by the industry itself, individually by MSO or whatever companies there are. What would you say from the consultant standpoint about what, if that's something that you preach to them and also, do they really just need to go ahead and fall along, tread as they can, but also keep a lawyer in hand?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that like if we had top-down regulation specifically in, you know, the hemp world, it would help things function better, right? I feel like the cat's out of the bag so much on the, you know, cannabis situation that like if there was top down regulations put in place, we'd have a nightmare situation like we had in California where it was like, you know, municipalities are running rogue. And so I think to your point, I think that's actually, you know, probably could be best case scenario, even though it is terrifying to have the feds involved in this. Right. Yeah. But then they have to have a will and a way to want to do this. And then you already have alcohol and cannabis fighting, and then you're going to have alcohol, cannabis, and hemp fighting. So, like, what's actually going to get passed? You know, this is actually something that's near and dear to my heart in the sense that one of my best girlfriends runs the poison control center, uh-huh. and she in Minnesota. And so she's responsible for South Dakota, North Dakota, and Minnesota. And when the governor accidentally signed that bill into place, like things went wild. Kids were being hurt. There were, you know, kids were like, you know, overdosing on unsafe products and things like that. So like something needs to be done. But I think the question is, who's lobbying for this if we're all lobbying against it?
Right. Now,
and where's the money coming from?
Right. No, exactly. So I want to go in real quickly, give you the context on some of the bills that have been put out there that are still moving forward. Texas has a House Bill 28 that's regulating THC drinkables and Senate Thrill 3, which will be a complete ban. You have those being put right now into Texas. So there's inconsistent state regulations on THC products. For those that, I mean, and I know there's some companies are obviously doing either CBD or THC products in the same vein. How do you advise these businesses navigating this legal landscape concerning high potency products and these access and, you know, if there are sudden bans? I mean, because right now it's like you're playing in a landmine right now. You don't know if something's going to go and happen that will penalize the company because there's no framework, and how much will they be willing to invest going forward when they feel like there's always a risk of something going wrong?
Right. It's capital. And how much runway do you have for the changes, right? This is the same thing that happened in Colorado, where when they introduced rec and they wanted to have, you know, different stamps even on the edibles. Let's talk about that for a second.
Right.
Different labeling and stamping of the actual manufactured good could be $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 problem for a small manufacturer to roll out. It's the same thing. You're getting into an industry. There's way too much gray, and you have to have your plan A, B, and C to pivot, because I can give you my thoughts on what I think should happen. So you can give your thoughts on what could happen. But the only thing that's constant is that it's going to change. And so you have to have the capital to absorb those changes. And a lot of times, a small little legislative change is going to be $500,000 problem. So how are you getting into this, and how are you thinking you're setting up a company that's going to have longevity if you don't have the capital and you don't have the plan A, B, C, and D? And you also can't sit around on the sidelines and say, you know what, I'm just actually going to wait to see what happens, because the guys that got in sooner are going to be the guys that have the seat at the table. They're going to be the brands that have been acknowledged, and you're going to have to tweak your formulas. You're going to have to tweak your labeling. You're going to have to tweak all these things, or you're going to have to tweak your entire product mix, right? You're going to have to take your beverage out. So if you're just a beverage company, you're dead. So are you diversifying? And so like, I know I harp on like planning. I'm like, I feel like one of my business partners is like, you're like a doomsday prepper. And I'm like, I am, because I've been in cannabis long enough to know that, like, I just actually got off the phone with one of my staff members today. And I was like, you can manage these projects really well if you have a plan A, a B, and a C. And if you think you have 8 hours of work today, you actually have 10.
But now part of the thing you talk about when it comes to capital, some of that capital, well, I'll make this other point, because you made the point about, you know, the things going to be done where the packaging is being concerned. There is the part of the trademark office and the fact that they're charging such an exorbitant fee now to companies on that part. So the government still gets a take from these companies no matter what this gray market is. They're finding their cut. The other part is, when it comes to the capital that should be invested, there's the risk mitigation factor. Because when I talked to Hub International, I remember we're talking about them, and they mentioned the fact that most of these companies will really take the lowest barrier to entry of taking a plan that will really not do enough. If something happens, they get penalized, there's some contamination, whatever there might be, that they don't have enough insurance to withstand the barrier if something happens and they have to go and do some kind of measure, like burn, you know, a product and destroy it, and they're out of business.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody right. talks about that part, but that's the other part when you talk about that as well. I mean, how much of capital should be considered on that? And is that something also being considered, aside of the legal factor, the insurance factor of what these companies need to do to make sure they're prepared and have peace of mind?
You know, I think that the disappointing conversation, and I'm blunt, I'll say it. The disappointing conversation is this industry used to be for the underdogs. I was an underdog. I knew nothing about business and I got in and I was a trailblazer and I made a name for myself and I, you know, made some money along the way, which is great. Could I have done that in an industry that was already set up? Probably not. The key players were already there. And so we used to have this grassroots industry that was easy to start something with small amount of capital, and the game's changed. Like I would never advise going into this business as a small mom and pop that was bootstrapping from their savings. Like, I just wouldn't do it, right? And I hate to say that because the industry was really special, at least for me, when it existed in that way. And now the big dogs have gotten in, and you mentioned this before we even jumped on the call, where it's like, you know, Arizona's all MSOs. How do you even keep your margins appropriate to stay in business and to stay alive? And at one point, these licenses were valued just for the paper at $15 million. Guess what? That's changing. Because the amount of money and capital that you actually have to bring to the game to have a seat at the table, to be vertically integrated, to have a product line that other retails to pay the $15 million for the license, and then the next, you know, or $10 million or however much they're trading for now, and then the next $10 million to actually make a difference in the industry and have enough to hire key staff and have enough to, you know, really run this in the way that it needs to be ran. It's sad. Part of it, I think, is really sad. I do.
Absolutely. Now, I want to make the distinction. What I did tell you before we got on the air, and I'll make this stat out here to go and talk to people to go and tease into the next break. 42% of social equity license lottery winners in Arizona are owned by corporate dispensaries, MSOs. That's a big number. And we know that's an issue that's going on with New York and Chicago and other places. We're going to talk all about that, but we're really going to focus more intensely on the great state of Minnesota, because they have rolled out their cannabis program. The rules have been laid out. We're going to go and roll through those and go through more. Here we're Sarah Gullickson, founder and CEO of the Cannabis Business Advisors. Here on Bump Business, we'll be back after a short break.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Welcome back to Bullet Business. I'm here, Sarah Gullickson, founder and CEO of the Cannabis Business Advisors. And make sure to go and take a website and find out more, thecannabisbusinessadvisors.com. Make sure, full one word. Or you can also go to Sarah's website at sarahgullickson.com, sarahgullickson.com. Make sure to check those while we're going along. Now, Minnesota has come in. Let me get this take real quickly from information that's going on out there. So, as of April 14th, draft rules were created by state officials, and were approved by an administrative law judge, published in the state register, according to the state's Office of Cannabis Management. So now, OC officials now can start issuing business licenses to qualified applicants who registered in the following categories: delivery service, medical combination, micro business testing, transporter, and wholesaler. And they will begin issuing licenses after business owners complete their final requirements of their applications. So far, I know you do quite a bit of work with those in Minnesota. What do you think about what's been ruled out so far, and how's the process going so far for some of these companies?
So I'm like very intimately involved with Minnesota.
Right.
And we've been a part of, I'm from there. And so like Minnesota has like a special place in my heart. And so we've been kind of riding the wave and really rooting for the program. And the amount that's happened between point A and let's say we're at like point Z now.
Right.
It's just been so many missteps, which has been really disappointing. And I think everybody, you know, has ridiculed what happened in New York. And, you know, I didn't think there would be a worse rollout, and now we're seeing one. And I hate to even say that, because it's just been so cumbersome. And as somebody that's been a part of some of the things that have happened on the legal front and it's really hard. The legislation says one thing, and then the way that the department actually rolled out the program was completely polar opposite of what the legislation said. And I think that that happens a lot, because I think that the, you know, powers that be or powers that are want very badly to be like social justice warriors, and they want this to kind of be something that, you know, works really well in. Quite frankly, we really haven't seen a social equity program that's worked. And we talked about this last year, and my thought on it is, you know, kind of the same thing is like, if we are going to have a true social equity program, we have to have a fund that supports the social equity individuals. And so I think that Minnesota has really done a disservice by saying licenses are basically unlimited, right?
Yes.
And when you got your approval early April, it wasn't even a provisional license. It wasn't even a provisional certificate. It was a pre-approval to get to the next stage, right? And the social equity people were supposed to have this upper hand because they were supposed to get their license sooner rather than later, right? Well, we don't know what the time frame is for like quote unquote normal licenses. So how big is your advantage? So if you don't know how big your advantage is, how do you sell that to investors to prop you up? And then the second part of the problem that I see that's a little disappointing is they didn't roll out proximity protection. So you're going to have thousands. I can't really understand what the full number is. The state published a graph. But we don't know the state published a graph of like who's applied, right? But we don't know who got these like quote unquote pre-approvals. So if 1,800 people applied, let's just use that number for an example. It's around that.
Right.
But only 1,000 of them actually got the pre-approval, then you know at this stage in the game, there are potentially 1,000 competitors. They're not bound to municipalities. And there's no way to achieve proximity protection. So when they'll grant you your actual hard license is when you open your doors. So you're going to spend how much? You know, I wouldn't say that you would spend less than $1 million doing so. So what you have to do is you have to look at municipalities that have moratoriums.
Yeah.
And you have to look at municipalities that only want 4 or 6. And you have to hope that you're the goodest boy to get this approval. Like, it's just, it's really disappointing. And so I think that the part that everybody's ignoring right now is the amount of money and time and energy that's wasted because everybody wants to be social justice warriors, which is fine. I think that there's a place in the industry. And I often go back to like, what happened to like favoring municipalities? What happened to favoring women in business or, you know, African-American in business, or like what happened to that? And so I think that when you are rolling out these programs, it is completely like nobody's thinking about the amount of capital that everybody's wasting to support said social equity, you know, applicants. Like there's, and I hate to like generalize like that, but I've probably put in more social equity applications in the country than anyone.
Yeah.
And I understand the profile. I understand there's once in a while we get like, you know, 1 or 2% of the time we get somebody that has ran businesses before and maybe does have a little seed capital to invest. But even then I wouldn't say, oh, give me your life savings. Like everybody needs investors. I would get an investor if I was doing any business. Why wouldn't I? So I think that I'm still really trying to wrap my head around Minnesota to see if it's an actual opportunity or not.
It's funny. Last year we talked all about this and the state legislature was in session. They could have been listening to this program. They could have been listening to me asking you these questions about this in particular. That 42% stat, that was from last year. And they talked about the lottery system. We brought it up. The interim cannabis director, Charlene Briner, brought this up saying that they wanted to go ahead and have it. There's an inherent advantage for well-funded applicants having the means to prepare an application in accordance with criteria. We talked about it. Yet, here comes the lottery system. They have brought it into place. And so they wanted to go ahead and go from a points-based licensing system to a lottery for social equity applicants. And your experience, you've already secured over 75 licenses nationwide. Now it's here, and it's like, well, and then among the applicants, well, I should make sure this point as well, more than 1,000 qualified applicants for licenses, according to the state, 600 of those applicants, first in line to receive business licenses after completing background checks, yada, yada. And then more than 2,000 applications were filed for cannabis licenses between February 18th and March 14th, with 1,800 filed last year. So we're here, it's put into place, and now this social equity lottery system, which has been flawed in New York State, in Chicago or Illinois, and New York has had their own issues when it comes to who gets the applications, because we know if they put out a number themselves, I'm sure it wouldn't be farther than that 42%, because as you said, all that money's going to be set on fees, set up on everything, and you just laid it out perfectly. How many social equity applicants can go through that entire exhaustive process and make it through without having to sell to an MSO?
Well, plus, what if you open and you have a store right next to you? That's not good business either.
No.
And the towns don't want it like that. They don't want a Colorado situation where there's a dispensary on every single corner. And so I know that's like, sounds like I'm this like capitalist, but when you're spending millions of dollars to open your doors, you have to be smart. And I will remind you of one thing. Minnesota has not won one of the cases brought against them. They're 0-4-0. And because it's there's been so much that they've even put in writing that's contradictory of what the spirit is versus what the letter of the law is.
Now, the other thing, too, is that Governor Walz, as we said, he was part of the ticket for president with Kamala Harris. So he was away for a good 4 months plus in that process, taking away from the duties of the state. And in this whole part of the rollout for cannabis, they're looking to go to open by early 2025, have dispensaries open, and have a goal of 51% of licenses reserved for social equity applicants. But that's those who ever get the licenses. We might not even know they're social equity applicants or not. Do you think that plays any part in the fact that, you know, this was being brought in, he's out, you know, pursuing a vice presidency, and might have taken away from maybe kind of intervening on what the process is and realizing, listen, we've tried social equity in other areas. We just can't be performative here. We actually have to go and think about the best interests of the Minnesotans.
Absolutely. I mean, yes, 100%. I mean, I've been scrutinized for my political views certain points of my career, but like, yes, this was a total and utter failure and botched job, and maybe the right attention wasn't being spent on the right things at the time. And that was obviously clear. We're still here having the same conversation for the most part that we were having a year ago.
And I was all up, and I really thought we were going to get somewhere, because when I learned, and I remember from Eric Stana, we talked to you, it was an attorney that's, I think, a Greenspoon martyr, and he was talking about Minnesota before I talked to you on that program back in March of last year. And there was so much going on when it came to the home grows and all these potential things. But it's like the same thing happens again in this market. And it's like you said, how far of a ramp is there, and how much room is there to really focus and basically just set up shop and work on that market. So like that's the part that you're saying yourself at this point, you know, 4 months in to the rollout, do you have like an idea of how invested you want to stay in Minnesota right now with what you're working on?
I don't want to be invested long-term in Minnesota, to be honest. You know, and it's funny because you just said something that really made me think about it, and not to get like hyper political.
Right.
I used to get flown in and I didn't used to get paid because it just didn't work that way back then. But I used to get flown into meetings to meet with governors, to meet with legislators, to tell them as like a third party of a consultant that's done this all over the country of what I believe would be the best rules and regulations and draft to float. And now I never get hired for that anymore. So why are they not hiring people? And it doesn't need to be me. There's a gazillion people that know social equity doesn't work, right? Why are they not bringing in subject matter experts to do these things to help them? They're hiring people that have no experience in cannabis from the department to say, okay, you're promoted. Now this is your department. Roll it out. How are they able to even do their job?
Right. The other thing I want to make mention of, Minnesota, the Minneapolis Star Tribune actually made a put, and this is like deep into the story on this, about the rollout of regulations. So the lottery is expected to be held later this spring toward capped license types, which while applicants for uncapped license types will meet minimum requirements that proceed with a licensing process without entering a lottery once rules are in place. This is the other part that's really interesting. Before they can open, licensed businesses must secure labor peace agreements with unions, undergo background checks, and ensure they're in compliance with local zoning ordinances, and pass a pre-opening inspection. So now they have to be unionized as well, or at least have communications with unions.
So I don't think the micros have to, but I think everybody else has to. So like the smallest, and I could be incorrect about that. That was actually something that was sent out in our pre-approvals for micros that we believed was not for micros. So that was another thing where I'm like, oh, we have to do these, right? Well, then we looked into the legislation and it was of our opinion that the micros did not have to. But that's the same thing. Even you take away the union, you still have to spend $1 million before you know if you get a certificate or not.
Yeah.
I mean. Wow.
And the story as well, when you mentioned micro businesses, they're allowed to cultivate on a relatively small scale, operate one retail store, medical cannabis combination businesses permitted to grow on a much larger scale, operate one store per congressional district to serve both medical and adult use. Damn, another state I wish would have learned from everyone else. Like just, they're not going to be all Colorado. Fine. But it's like you're seeing the rollout of other states and they just continue to keep falling on the same mousetrap for whatever reason. They can't just get their mind off it and try to go and just go on a different route. Realize just somebody, you know, take some grant money, do some research before you can roll out the cannabis program.
Yeah.
But I want to see what they're going to do here and see what happens. Like you said, if there's not much room for investment in here, then that's what it is. And, you know, regardless, it will probably do pretty well because, you know, right now farmers are, you know, they're getting a chance to going to be participating in a $2 million grant program. So there's going to be some help out there. Grants going to be put out there and the social equity lottery is going to be out there. See who gets lucky on that. You know, there's still good in this, but like, man, I wish somebody would have done the follow through, but again, that's state and federal government for you. Just continues to be the same role over and over. Now we're going to go back to break, but when we come back, I want to ask and some issues when it comes to the Treasury Department want to go in intervening right now on cannabis businesses to combat money laundering. It's a new story I heard about here, so we're going to talk about that. And wrap things up here with Sarah Gullickson, founder and CEO of the Cannabis Business Advisors. Website is thecannabisbusinessadvisors.com. And also her personal website, sarahgullickson.com, sarahgullickson.com. Back with Sarah and final questions after this. Welcome back to Bullet Business. I'm here with Sarah Gullickson, founder and CEO of the Cannabis Business Advisors. So before the break, I mentioned how the Treasury Department has been proposing to collect data on marijuana businesses to combat money laundering. That was proposed back in 2022. I don't know if that's something that's still going to go forward, but again, we have a new administration. Who knows where they're going to go with that route? But if that's something becomes something where, I mean, we already know that the DEA has kind of been intervening because of the fact that we're trying to wait on them to get the rescheduling process across. I've already said on previous episodes that I think that they're waiting for the nomination of Terrence Cole to DEA secretary, that we have to wait for that to be confirmed for them to move along and for that administrative law judge, John Mulroney, to go ahead and move along with the case. Given that said, what advice do you give big cannabis businesses right now when it comes to the issues of this money laundering and increased financial scrutiny and compliance requirements? Meanwhile, we're waiting for the government to go and help give relief by allowing rescheduling to happen, 280E being taken off the books so that companies can start writing off taxes like any other business. But at the same time, they could even be getting more financial scrutiny.
Right. I mean, I think it boils down to the same problems that we talk about all the time, which are obviously presenting themselves as opportunities for the larger companies because they have the capital to do it. It's, are we going to be treated like a normal business? Yes or no? And if so, what does that threshold mean? Do we want to let the cat completely out of the bag and have unlimited licenses everywhere that are lottery processes and may the best man kind of win? Or do we want to pull the industry back to a merit-based limited license opportunity? And that's really the problems that I've been talking about in the industry. I remember when I was young in my career, I flew in to Arkansas to stand up in front of the committee to give my thoughts on why I thought merit was better. So unless you're going to just completely legalize, merit is better, right? Because we have lotteries taking place that are just not factoring any of this stuff in. And when you're talking about money laundering, what are the articles that we saw come out of the media 3-4 years ago, or maybe it wasn't that, it probably was that long ago, for Oklahoma? That's what was happening. It was a free-for-all. Everybody was doing what they were doing. They were taking money in from China and Russia, and it became like the biggest money laundering capital for cannabis in the United States. So if you boil it down, it's not that many problems. It's that the industry needs to decide what it wants to be when it grows up. And is it this small knit group of people that get to capitalize on it like alcohol or not?
Yeah. One last thing I want to ask you about, and this is, I don't know how far this is going to go along, but the Marijuana Herald, I'm not sure, I've never heard of that publication, but they're citing unnamed sources that President Trump is urging members of Congress to pass a similar bill to say would be similar to the Safer Banking Act that was introduced in the past. And the idea is that he's looking for legislation that's similar to that. And he's been reportedly advocating behind the scenes for this kind of bill that has stalled in the Senate in the past. Is there anything where you see that because of the change of administration, like I said, first thing I'm always hoping for is that with a new administration, with a change of Senate, House, presidency, that if Congress is going to be more efficient and start moving along, haven't shown us that yet, but if they can finally get things moving along and start seeing bills being proposed and being brought forward for a vote, maybe we can get somewhere and maybe cannabis can start being considered in that line in the queue of what could be proposed, what could be brought to vote and see what happens. But when I look at that right there, what do you think about the fact that there might be something of any validity to this story that maybe we might see something of a Safer Banking Act that's being proposed right now to push the Senate and the House to get something forward?
I absolutely think we'll see something. I absolutely think that there are people working on this, and I think that things are happening quicker than they have in the past. You know, over the last 6 months, and at the end of the day, love him or hate him, our president is a capitalist, right? And so do you think he wants these things stalled up, whether he likes drugs or not? Like, we obviously by now all know his temperature on alcohol and drugs, and he's not, you know, really pro. But like, if he, and I think he can take his personal tie and trauma that's happened in his life and set that aside to say, hey, this is an industry that could be very good for our economy. Why are we slowing them down instead of speeding them up?
It was something he was talking about on the campaign trail last September. So from a Truth Social post, he did talk about the fact of unlocking medical uses of marijuana, the Schedule III drug, work with Congress to pass common sense laws, including safe banking for state authorized companies and supporting states' rights to pass marijuana laws, like in Florida, that works so well for the citizens. So, and you know what? I mean, whether you like him or hate him, as you said, if he's making his promises, even making his points that he's going to go and keep his promises, he does it. It's been pretty clear that we see it, and there's a lot of blowback from what those promises are that he's trying to keep. So I believe this is also going to come to fruition. We're going to get somewhere The one thing I'm just waiting for is just that if we're going to see anything back from this administrative law judge, if he's going to be able to move forward. Because right now, as of press time here, we're in late April. We have seen no movement right now from the DEA to move forward on that rescheduling request for the HHS, which has been, again, more than 15 months, 18 months since we've heard about it. So we just got to see if there's a finish line here. And hopefully that'll come quickly. I don't know if it'll happen in time for people to go ahead and, you know, start working on the 2026 taxes and say, okay, the tax returns for 2025, can we go and write them off? Will there be enough time to do it? Or if another version of safer banking comes into play and we can start talking about that, which, you know, I know we'll start hearing about it because we'll start hearing the religious right and other organizations out there. They'll be thumping away about big weed. And of course, they'll go ahead and start talking and that'll at least get the conversation going. So once I start hearing those detractors there coming up and they're starting to go ahead and come to the forefront, then I know we're getting somewhere. So we're waiting for that. Sarah, real quickly before we wrap things up, let's direct people again to the website, thecannabisbusinessadvisors.com. You're obviously still busy, but you can obviously take on new clients. Tell them what they should be doing when they go to the website.
You know, we just have obviously like great legislative overviews. I think that like normal people, when they get into the industry, the first place to start is like, what state are you in, and see if there's an opportunity in your state. If there's not an opportunity in your state, usually it's nice to look at like neighboring states, you know, to figure out what's happening there. You know, to see if you could potentially get involved in, you know, licensing, or if you're wanting to make, you know, more of a passive investment in the industry, we always have a lot of opportunities for that as well.
Website again, thecannabisbusinessadvisors.com. And of course, your website, saragullickson.com, saragullickson.com. And for those of you who go to the website, what can they look forward to when they get to the site?
Oh, my personal site?
Yeah.
Oh, it's just, I mean, I think it's actually being redone right now. I think that there's like we did client work a long time, right? And then we kind of got into the process of, you know, client work was being separated by attorneys, and there was just so many people doing client work. So we're rolling out saragullickson.com to be a little bit more articulate in the fact that we do a lot of investment work. And that means, you know, passive investments where we're outlining, you know, best states, best license values, best startup. And so if you contact me on that site, I'd love to have those conversations for the people that are interested in that.
Also notice on the website, if people want to go ahead and reach out to you for speaking engagements, you're also made available, though, that you do quite a bit of work in that respect. I know you do quite a bit of speaking engagements at a lot of conferences, and also you're out there, and I'm sure the flyer miles are plenty. Sarah, thank you again for being with us here on the program. As always, we love having you on and getting your insight on this, especially with Minnesota when it comes to the new markets. And, you know, I feel like there's a lockstep when it comes to compliance and just what we want for good, profitable, responsible cannabis businesses. We're looking forward to that. Sarah, again, thanks for being on with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed our conversation. I appreciate it.
As always, we'll do it again very soon. And listeners, thanks for listening to another Blunt Business. We'll talk to you next time.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter interior paint is a paint and primer in one with a tough, lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter paint and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.